You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
It is 2017, and that has to be very exciting news for Giants fans who go into every baseball season knowing that they have a chance to win a World Series. Let's talk to Chris Haft about that. I am Allison Sutter. Chris, it's always just a fun time when baseball season starts at that beautiful ballpark in San Francisco. But there's still some questions that have to be answered. And so I was reading some of your coverage, and one of the questions, I guess, is should the Giants add a reliever? They have some young guys, but they had this problem last year, and they got Mark Melanson, but do they need someone leading up to him? So where are they on that?
They can take their time, I think, Allison, because it's a buyer's market out there right now for free agents in general, and I think relievers in particular. Those spots aren't really probably going to get filled up, whether it's the Giants or any other team, until right before spring training begins, you know, with a trade or, in most cases, I think, a free agent signing. So, but yes, I think the Giants do need a little more depth there, even if it's just to, you know, to add to competition during the Cactus League and spring training. So we may see something here sometime in the next few weeks over, you know, about having bring aboard a right-hander.
Yeah, you can never have too many arms. Certainly going into spring training, there seems like there's if a team has an abundance of guys going for a few jobs, and that's a good thing, sort of. And in another way, it's, well, they don't have any real concrete answers, and that might not bode well for the long haul of a six-month season. But also, it's going to be an interesting spring training just because there's going to be a lot of players from a lot of teams all throughout the camps who are going to leave to go compete in the World Baseball Classic. And I thought this was an interesting take that you had, just kind of speculating or wondering if playing in the World Baseball Classic is a risk. I always thought it was a risk for pitchers. Just because it's the time of year it is, you know, spring training is such that players are shaking off the rust, getting their arms back in shape, and the competition is quite heated during the WBC. So, but position players, is it a risk for them? Do you think that they could maybe go too hard, not really meaning to, but just because that's really the only gear they have? Is that a risk, do you think?
Yes, I definitely do, Allison. The Giants had a pretty big representation at the WBC 3 years ago. I forget exactly how many, but I think it was 7 or 8 players. And a couple of them developed some problems that maybe didn't show up right away, health problems that really didn't show up right away, but plagued them in the long run. And the club, of course, club officials didn't want to criticize the WBC or anything, because you know it's a baseball wide initiative and everybody's meant to contribute, so to speak, to it, you know, in terms of letting players participate. And I think people in the major leagues do respect the desire of players to participate and represent their respective countries. That being said, the injury here and injury there can really derail a club, you know, when it's going for a division title or whatever. And let's see, 2013, that Giants finished out was their last sub-500 season since 2009. So I don't know if there's any correlation, but I know they're going to be holding their breath this March when Buster Posey and Brandon Crawford and Johnny Cueto, well, I know those three are for sure, compete for their respective countries. And I think we might have talked before, I forget, but those are three guys who keep themselves in excellent shape pretty much throughout the year. So maybe the Giants don't have to worry, but, you know, on the other hand, baseball players are creatures of habit, so it'll be a change in habit for the three of them. And once again, the Giants hope that that doesn't lead to some sort of ache or pain.
Yeah, and we've talked about it before, but I would think that position players would just be giddy to get out of the mundane, really kind of boring routine that is spring training. Everyone's very excited to get there, and then by about week two, you start looking at the calendar, waiting to see when you get to get out of there and go play some games. And you did make a really good point. You said, like, don't let Johnny Cueto's, heft, I guess is a word, be deceiving, because he – really takes care of himself just as well as anybody else. He just happens to be a little bit of a bigger guy, but it doesn't mean he's out of shape.
Oh, correct. He, you know, rides bikes. He runs up Camelback Mountain in spring training, you know, which is a challenge for anybody. Rides his bike up there, runs stadium steps all the time during the season. There are some cases where body type can be deceiving, and his is one of them.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on to a totally different topic, this Hall of Fame thing. You and I can both appreciate what Jeff Kent was as a player, considering that he played extensively for the Giants and for the Astros. And I'm shocked because he's polling at about 16%. I haven't checked the numbers recently in the last day or two, but last year he got 16.6% of the vote. So he's not only is he not getting any traction, he's dangerously close to falling off of the ballot. And I don't know. To me, he's one of the best offensive second basemen ever. And I know that there's some knocks against him that are kind of used as criteria, not great defensively. But does it surprise you that he's not getting more respect when it comes to Hall of Fame voting? I'm shocked.
Yeah, I share your feeling. It does shock me. I mean, he is the all-time leading second baseman, you know, home run hitter among second basemen. That ought to count for something. People can say, well, he benefited from, you know, batting ahead of or behind Barry Bonds. Well, maybe he did. But when he left the Giants, he sure had some pretty big years, too. He was an effective offensive player right up until almost the very end. You know, you could always count him for a good at-bat. Again, look at those numbers, you know, before, during, and after. Well, no, not before Bonds, but during, you know, his time with Barry. But after, you know, again, they compare favorably. His numbers do. And defensively, he wasn't a butcher. He wasn't Roberto Alomar. But then again, who is? I've talked extensively to Rich Aurelio, who played shortstop next to him. And Rich said, you know, that Jeff was, you know, a fine guy to team up with on double plays and stuff like that. And he made, you know, most of the routine plays, which is really what you want from any infielder. Attitude-wise, some people have, you know, found him to be kind of maybe a bit flinty, I guess you would say. But as Rich and J.T. Snow told me, it's funny, I interviewed them on separate occasions, and they both said the same exact thing, almost word for word. At 7:05, 7:15, or whatever, he was the best teammate you could want. If that, along with all the stats, don't say, you know, Hall of Famer, I don't know what is.
Yeah, I have to agree with that 100%. I think that if you had, he only played for the Astros for 2 years, but he wasn't buddies with really anybody. Kept to himself a lot, but they said, but if you asked anybody right now, like, who would you want to have on your team trying to win a World Series, they would say Jeff Kent. Yeah, I kind of take exception a little bit with some of the reports that speculate that possibly because of his, you know, not wonderful relationship with the media, that maybe that is hurting him now. I find that ridiculous. If that is influencing a voter at all, they shouldn't be voting. Eddie Murray is a prime example of somebody who was really kind of reviled by the media and was a first ballot Hall of Famer. And I'm not saying that Jeff Kent should be a first ballot, but I mean, there's so many layers to him. And just from a competitive standpoint and from a production standpoint, and the other thing I have to say, and I know I'm going off on a tangent, but this Gold Glove thing. Well, he's never won a Gold Glove. And after I have seen kind of like on the inside sort of how this Gold Glove voting goes, and there are, and by the way, it is a, if I'm not mistaken, the managers and coaches vote for Gold Gloves, which I think is a mistake. But I've seen, you know, like coaching staff that pay no attention to stuff and just haphazardly fill out these ballots. I've seen managers and coaches that have, like, taken it very seriously and really put in a lot of thought. But it bothers me that when it comes time for Hall of Fame voting, that these are kind of the things that come up as knocks against guys when I think the voting process could be improved a little bit if it means that much all these years later. Does that make any sense?
Makes plenty of sense, Allison. I mean, his is the case. I'm almost sure he's not going to get elected to the Hall of Fame before his eligibility runs out. So, which means 10-20 years from now or whatever, you know, we'll see his name come up in the Today's Era balloting. And he probably won't get in there either. I mean, look at this. Look at this. They had some pretty high-caliber guys this past winter, last month, December. It was December. And, you know, come up for eligibility in the Today's Era committee, formerly known as the Veterans Committee. And none of those guys made it in. I don't know if Jeff Kent will ever make it in. And it's for guys of his caliber, because there are others like him, it's kind of a shame.
Yeah, it is, especially in the era that he played in. And I'm pretty convinced that he was a clean player, which just, I don't know, the whole thing is a little bit bothersome. But, okay, we'll move on to a happier note. So now we're going to put you on the spot, and you're going to make a bold prediction going into spring training. So this prediction will be something that might not sit well with fans, and other fans might wholeheartedly agree. So you're kind of putting yourself out there on a ledge. But what is your bold prediction going into spring training?
Well, my bold prediction is something I think fans will like. I just don't know if they'll all agree it's going to happen. And frankly, I don't know if it's going to happen, but that's why it's a bold prediction, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I do think they'll get a not a big bat, but a proven bat, a guy who can be a regular either in left field or at third base. These guys, you know, they smell a potential World Series appearance. You know, certainly a postseason appearance. And with all due respect to Jarrett Parker and Mack Williamson, the left field candidates, I don't know if they want to go with them in left field. I'm not sure if they're sold on the Eduardo Nunez, Connor Gillespie combination at third base. So I can see them trading for like a Todd Frazier. I can see them maybe looking at in free agency at Luis Valbuena or Trevor Plouffe. Or maybe trading, trading for or signing some sort of left fielder. So maybe signing a Michael Saunders and moving him to left, because I think he played primarily right for Toronto, but he could handle left field at AT&T Park. It's easiest of the three outfield positions to play there. So even though they're saying right now that they don't have enough money, they're up against the competitive balance tax limit. I think the head, not cooler heads will prevail, but the people that want to see the people in the organization who want to see the team back in postseason prominence. And that's everybody who works in the front office there. I think they'll prevail, and something will get done.
Okay, good stuff. That would be very exciting for fans if that happens. So thank you so much, Chris. Appreciate it. Talk to you next time.
Thank you, Allison.
It is 2017, and it's time to look ahead to the upcoming spring training season, followed by the ever-exciting regular season. Let's talk about the Arizona Diamondbacks with Steve Gilbert. I am Allison Futter. Steve, Happy New Year to you. And let's just start with some newsy information. The last couple of days, the Diamondbacks acquired a right-handed pitcher, from the Royals. So what can you tell us about that transaction?
He's somebody that they had some good reports on, somebody that they liked. But more importantly, he's somebody that had some good reports on. They had designated Peter O'Brien for assignment to make room on the roster recently. So they had to make a decision with Peter. So it was kind of one of those deals that was just, That was just, they had to make a deal with him, and they got something back, a piece that they kind of like. I think Peter O'Brien was a guy that he put up some really good numbers down in AAA for them. He just really didn't have a position. He was originally a catcher, kind of got a little bit of a case of the throwing yips a couple springs ago, and so he moved to the outfield and just wasn't really a plus defender out there. As hard as he worked at it. So really kind of a better fit for an American League team. The Royals might be able to get something out of this deal if Peter's able to hit and shorten up his stroke a little bit. He struck out a lot during his time in the big leagues with the Diamondbacks, but he's certainly got a power bat and somebody that would benefit from not having to play in the field.
And another transaction, Ruby De La Rosa. So they non-tendered him in December, and I kind of thought that was going to be it for them. But they wanted him to remain in the organization, correct?
Yeah, Ruby's got that elbow issue right now, and He's already had one Tommy John surgery, and they did some stem cell treatment with him. And they really won't know whether or not that's successful until he starts throwing during the spring. So they didn't want to get locked into an arbitration number with him. So they're going to bring him back. They're going to throw him out of the bullpen, which is something that a lot of people had talked about over the years. You know, he has a good fastball slider combination, and so maybe he profiles better as a reliever. Throws hard, so it could, you know, be somebody that could help them out of the pen if he's healthy. And so they signed him to a low kind of guarantee with a bunch of incentives tied in. So they really don't lose much if he's not healthy, and if they do get something out of him, then he will benefit as well based on the incentive package.
Yeah, I guess in that situation, I mean, it makes perfect sense on both sides, because comfort level has to be a factor here. I mean, for him to get back to where he needs to be, it's certainly nice, I would think, to have the familiar faces and the people that are familiar with him as he goes forward through this excursion.
Yeah, I would think so. I think that's always good when you're used to dealing with a team's medical staff. You kind of like to keep that consistency. At least that was, you know, Daniel Hudson's feeling when he came back from his second Tommy John surgery and signed a deal, not this offseason he signed with the Pirates, but before that he had re-signed with the Diamondbacks. In large part, he said, because, you know, the training staff knew him, he was comfortable with what their plan was for him. So that was the direction he decided to go. So that's definitely got to be a factor, I'm sure. I haven't talked to Ruby, but I'm sure that the factor for him is just kind of the comfort with the Diamondbacks medical staff.
So as far as like a question that needs to be answered as they inch toward really opening day, just kind of running through the headlines and studying the depth chart with the Diamondbacks, I guess who's going to play up the middle? They seem to have maybe a lot of choices in that case, which is nice to have that kind of problem. But they really have to make some decisions as to who's going to be their everyday, a couple of their everyday infielders.
Yeah, they've really got to decide who's going to be the second baseman, who's going to be the shortstop. They've got a number of candidates for both. It kind of sounds like Brandon Drury is the favorite at second base, just based on the fact that they've talked about wanting to get him consistent at bats. And obviously that's not going to happen at third base with Jake Lamb there. And his outfield play last year, while, again, he worked hard at it and put a lot of time into it and was not a bad defender per se. It's just probably not the best place for him and the best fit for him. So it looks like second base would be that best fit. So if they're committed to giving him every day at bats, or they're leaning towards giving him every day at bat, it seems like he might be the front runner there. And at shortstop, you got Chris Owings, you've got Nick Ahmed, who's coming back from hip surgery. And you've got Ketel Marte, who they acquired from the Mariners in a recent trade too. So there's plenty of up the middle options for them. It's going to be interesting to see how they kind of sort all that out during spring training.
And the last topic that we'll talk about, I'm going to put you on the spot. So I need a bold prediction as we head into spring training, something that can be either logical or outlandish, something that people might agree with, some people that might tweet you and tell you're an idiot and hopefully spell your correctly. Give me a bold prediction going into spring training.
I certainly don't lack from people sending me tweets telling me I'm an idiot. So, you know, I'm going to go. We talked a little bit about this beforehand, but I'm going to say that the Diamondbacks, who are still looking for some catching help, I'm going to say they go big. And if the market doesn't improve here for Matt Wieters, somehow they get Matt Wieters, whether it's on a 1-year deal for a higher annual average value than he would get in the free agent market. Or whatever, so he can reestablish his value going forward. I think maybe they stretch the budget if they feel good about the team that they have, and maybe go out, and if that market again for him stays where it's at, maybe they get a shot. Maybe they take maybe they get Matt Wieters to kind of lead them behind the plate.
Okay, so at Steve Gilbert, is that what we have here? People can just start
at Steve Gilbert MLB is where people can start telling me I'm an idiot.
Okay, good stuff. Thank you so much, Steve. Talk to you soon.
Allison, my pleasure.
It is 2017 and time to look ahead to the upcoming spring training and regular season. It's getting very exciting for a lot of fans out there, including Padres fans. Let's talk to A.J. Casavell about the Padres. I am Allison Sutter. A.J., as we sort of inch our way towards pitchers and catchers reporting, which is in about 6 weeks, the Padres have made a couple minor moves. First of all, they picked up Tyrell Jenkins a right-handed pitcher off of waivers from Cincinnati, but he actually has been with, like, technically with, like, three organizations since the season ended. So can you tell us about his journey and how bizarre that is?
Yeah, he's had an interesting month and a half. I'm sure he's probably wondering whether he's here to stay in San Diego. I think that he certainly is. The Padres were interested in him before he got claimed by Cincinnati. But essentially what happened was season ended with Atlanta, was traded to Texas, claimed off waivers by the Reds, and now he's been claimed off waivers by the Padres. So he's been on four teams, I guess, in the span of, we'll call it, 3 months. So he's bounced around. What that tells me, one, is that, teams are interested in his raw talent. They're taking a chance on him. But obviously he's still very unproven. The one thing I noticed throughout the minor leagues, he doesn't give up a ton of home runs. He made it to the majors last year and did. But if that translates, I think that'll be something that can play in the major league level, obviously. He doesn't miss a lot of bats, which is concerning, but he's still only 24 years old. That's something that he can work on. So for the Padres, it's essentially he's in the mix for the back end of the rotation. I wouldn't expect him right now to have that number five starter spot, but he's in the mix, and they'll give him a chance in camp.
There's going to be a lot of guys that we're going to probably say that about going to the Padres camp. I would think that there's probably a pretty decent pool at this point of no sure things, but a lot of possible rotation guys that might be a fit. I guess is that going to be mainly what's going to occupy the attention at spring training, just from a reporting standpoint?
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually just wrote something on the eight candidates and the case for and against all of them, because I'm not so sure any of the eight had a spot locked up. I would say probably Clayton Richard, he's a pretty good candidate. Luis Perdomo's a pretty good candidate. But they all have – none of them are locks for the rotation. So there's really five rotation spots up for grabs. I would say there's four favorites right now: Richard, Perdomo, Jolie Chassin, and Christian Friedrich. And the fifth spot will be wide open. And honestly, if a couple guys make a name for themselves in the spring, they could supplant any of those four. So the rotation race will be interesting. I think across the diamond, for the most part, things are pretty settled. There's an interesting debate at second base, but I think Ryan Chimp's in the lead. But the interesting, or at least what I'm the most interested going into camp, is who claims those five rotation spots.
So I was reading your inbox, and I saw a name that I was like, I don't think I've ever had this discussion with you about. I've never heard of this guy. So somebody, a fan, asked, what are the chances that Dinelson Lamet makes the 2017 club? And you said that his chances aren't really great, but that there's a pretty good upside. So tell us about him, and is this another young player that we haven't discussed that maybe is a part of this future?
Yeah, I think he's a part of the very near future. He's not. I think the question was, would he make the opening day roster? And I don't think there's a very good chance of that now that they've signed Richard and they've signed Chassin and they brought in Jenkins. But I think there's a very good chance he debuts some point in the middle of the season. It's also an interesting. They have a couple prospects, pitching prospects, that they'd like to start the season out in the AAA rotation, Walker Lockett being one, Michael Kelly's another. They aren't in the same kind of category as Lamet, who the Padres feel could be an effective reliever. He's got a fastball slider mix that kind of profiles as a reliever. Now, they view him as a starter down the road, but if you look at kind of, not to compare him to David Price, but the David Price kind of path where they throw him in as a reliever early on and kind of get him acquainted to major league hitters, that's a path that the Padres would be willing to explore. And that's something that's why I wouldn't necessarily rule him out of the roster mix going into spring training. He could maybe claim one of those last bullpen spots. It'll be tough to do because they've got a couple Rule 5 picks that they'd like to hang on to. So they're obviously taking up some of the final roster spots. But I wouldn't be shocked if Lamet kind of proved himself in the one-inning situations, which he hasn't had a whole lot of in the minor leagues, and won one of those spots. Then eventually down the road, the Padres could extend him back into being a starter.
And so our final topic will be on a bold prediction going into spring training. So this can be kind of anything that you think could happen, might not happen. It's fun to speculate on, something that will get people talking. What is your bold prediction as we get into the stretch run of this hot stove season?
Well, I think there's been some speculation that the Padres might pursue a reunion with Jake Peavy. And that makes a lot of sense to me. So if I have to make a bold prediction, I'll say that the Padres bring back Jake Peavy. He's obviously a perfect fit here in San Diego. He's beloved by this entire fan base, former Cy Young winner. he seems to be the perfect fit for this rotation too. Everyone loves his work ethic. He's got a couple World Series titles under his belt. Right now, as it stands, the Padres have Clayton Richard, I think, is the only player on the roster above 30. So they could use that veteran presence in there. They could use another name to add to the rotation. I think as it stands, they've got 8 guys in the rotation mix. They wouldn't mind adding a ninth and kind of just to deepen the competition. And PV seems to check all those boxes, and I'm sure he wouldn't mind a reunion with San Diego where he had so many great years.
That would be pretty awesome. That would be exciting for fans, even if he's not the same guy, but that would be certainly give people something to talk about. So, okay, good stuff. AJ, thank you so much. Talk to you next time.
Yep, thanks for having me on.
It is officially 2017, which means it's time to start talking about the upcoming baseball season. And if you're a Rockies fan, this upcoming season could actually be pretty fun. Let's talk to Thomas Harding about that. I'm Allison Fitter. Thomas, I want to start with, like, on a very positive note. We've talked about a lot of the kind of budding stars that are coming up through the system, but there's one super-duper legitimate superstar that's already on the roster, Nolan Arenado. I was looking at the Rockies' financial commitments over the next few years, and there really aren't that many. Is he a candidate to possibly – would they approach him to sign an extension? He's, I guess, in his second year of arbitration eligibility, but do they have money, logically, to lock him up in a kind of Todd Helton way?
Yeah, I'm expecting them to do that because if you look at their history, whether it was Larry Walker back in the day, then Todd Helton, Troy Tulowitzki, Carlos Gonzalez, when they've had a player like that, that's where they've spent the money. Even though they've talked about increasing the payroll, they tend to do it in that vein rather than just going out and spending money on someone else on the outside. If they've developed a star, they tend to keep them. With Nolan Arenado, he has 3 years of arbitration eligibility left because he was a Super 2 guy last year, so there is some time. I do expect them to go to Arenado or Arenado to come to them and see if they can't work out something that'll keep him beyond his years of arbitration eligibility.
Yeah, it's nice that they have that that kind of relationship with him, that he's had so much success. Seems like a really good representative of the team. He just seems like somebody that would like kind of fit that mold of being, you know, the big leader that they want around for another decade. And I mean, really, when you look at like Carlos Gonzalez, he signed just through 2017. Then he's a free agent, and I guess Ian Desmond is now their sort of financial responsibility, signed through 2022. That last season is a club option. And so, I mean, I'm not saying that they're going to like pack the ballpark so much this year coming up. I mean, they have some work to do as far as that, but things are trending in the right direction where they might be able to get a little creative in the next few years in terms of money.
Yeah, in fact, I know there's been some discussion, and Carlos Gonzalez mentioned it during a trip to Venezuela, of even keeping him beyond this contract, which the Rockies value him probably more than other teams, because if other teams had really valued him, I think he would have been traded by now because they would have blown the Rockies away with the offer. But maybe to keep Carlos Gonzalez a couple more years beyond this, and definitely Nolan Arenado. And then you've got guys that could be candidates for extensions down the road. Could it be a Trevor Story, maybe, if he continues, or even a Charlie Blackman? I know there's talk about trading him, but he has solved a center field situation and a leadoff situation that really the Rockies have had trouble with in the past. So I wouldn't be surprised if there weren't more multi-year contracts coming out of this team in the next couple of seasons.
Speaking of Trevor Story, it's kind of cool. His first year of arbitration eligibility isn't even until 2019. Obviously, a huge breakout rookie season. Sidelined, unfortunately. That was a real bummer when he was sidelined with that thumb injury. But that's got to be so exciting. I mean, more than Nolan Arenado, I think if I'm a Rockies fan, I can't wait for the season to start just to see what he can do, what Trevor Story can do, assuming a full healthy season. I mean, the sky's the limit on this kid.
Yeah, it is. And it's really interesting because he was a supplemental first-round pick, but really went through all the steps of the minor leagues. He didn't exactly have this skyrocket minor league career that took him to the top, but after Tulowitzki was traded and Jose Reyes ran into his legal problems, definitely Trevor Story showed that they did the right things in getting him ready, whether it was not moving him up too fast, whether it was moving him some to second base and third base so he can handle all of his shifts. this guy came to the major leagues ready, and offensively, I don't think they necessarily expected the power, but if you look at his AAA year when he hit the most home runs of his minor league career, it was coming too. So he was a well-developed player. He was kind of the type of guy the Rockies want to have. Yeah, it would be nice to see a guy just zoom through the system and become a star, but the guys that need the development time, it's good to see that they can successfully develop. I think it gives more confidence to not just the coaches and the people developing them, but also those players saying, hey, we're being taught the right things in this system.
Absolutely. So you're in Denver right now, and you mentioned before we actually started this call that you are stuck in your house in a snowstorm. It's 5 degrees. When New Year's hits, is it kind of like, I don't know, when I was a beat writer, since New Year's Eve was over, I was sort of thinking, okay, it's baseball season again, even though spring training is 6 weeks away. But it's kind of it's symbolic, but also pretty concrete. Once January gets here, you feel like the chaos is just around the corner. Is that how you feel?
Yeah, I do. Actually, it's funny because my whole year, or at least that part of the year, is predicated on the calendar. You know, Thanksgiving, you really do know who's free, who isn't, what the roster looks like. You start looking at it. At the end of the winter meetings, when we leave the hotel and they're taking down the baseball stuff and putting up the Christmas and holiday decorations, then you see that time coming. It reminds me I need to go shopping. Then after it's over, there's that little bit of a lull week, and yes, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, you start thinking, okay, pretty soon, pitchers, and we're going to hear balls popping into the glove. I mean, yeah, I almost want to drive by one of these indoor facilities and just stand outside, not even watch it, just hear it, because that's when you really start thinking about baseball for real, as opposed to this theoretical baseball that's going on.
Exactly. It's been too much theoretical baseball for the last few weeks. But let's end this with a bold prediction. Give me and it's got to be bold, which means that it's going to maybe, some people might agree, some people might disagree. It doesn't have to come true. It's just, we're just talking. Give me a bold prediction for 2017.
Okay. I would love to give the bold prediction that they're going to trade Charlie Blackmon and remake this team, but I just don't see that happening because of the things I've talked about earlier, playing center field and being the leadoff hitter. What I think they're going to do, even though the signing of Alexi Amarisa, which isn't official yet, will put them at 40, they're going to make another move and bring in a solid reliever. And my bold prediction will be that they will outbid either the Dodgers for Joe Blanton or the Giants for someone like Santiago Casilla. I don't necessarily think Sergio Romo, but maybe him. But they're going to outbid some people in their own division to add to that bullpen and really go after those guys.
My bold prediction is that they're going to have a winning record and they're going to be right in the middle of a wild card race all season long.
I already agree with that. Now, if you want me to give a next bold prediction during the season, is that if they are close, that will be when they make the big deal involving maybe parting with some of their prized prospects. I like what they've done this winter, holding on to everybody and improving that way, because what it does, it sets up the trading deadline for a big move to really go for the division. And as a lot of the guys are talking about, it would be great to get in the playoffs. And, heck, they made the World Series in 2007 just getting into the playoffs. But wouldn't it be nice for the Rockies to win a division? They've never done that in their history.
Oh, it'd be awesome. Okay, awesome. Thank you so much, Thomas. Appreciate it. Good talk. Talk to you soon.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It is 2017, and it's time to look ahead to pitchers and catchers reporting to spring training. And then, of course, the regular season lurking not far behind. Let's talk about the Dodgers with Ken Gernick. I'm Allison Sweater. Ken, it's really, you know, we do these podcasts, and there's always something that could happen with the Dodgers. So realizing that things could get outdated very quickly, because I know the Brian Dozier talks, and rumors are still out there. The Dodgers have obviously been linked to him maybe more than any other team. And it appears that they're just going to have to maybe agree on some prospects. And Jose De Leon, it's kind of understood he would be in that package. Is that correct?
Well, that's based on the rumors, yeah. I mean, nobody's confirmed anything, but that sure is the way it looks, right?
Yeah, and I think that, of course, prospects are always hard to part with, but it would be who else goes along with that, and Cody Bellinger. And I guess my point is, the Dodgers also, like, let's say this trade does not happen. De Leon and Bellinger kind of seem like the next guys that would have a chance to really work their way into onto the Dodgers major league roster. Bellinger seems like a really exciting player, just with big power, left-handed hitter. So I wouldn't be surprised if they hung on to him and insisted on hanging on to him. He seems to have a big upside.
Yeah, it seems like he's as close to untouchable as any of their minor league players are right now. You know, they have depth at starting pitching and young starting pitching, and I think that's why if they were to trade De Leon, that wouldn't be a surprise. But, you know, as far as a young power hitter coming up who could play the outfield or first base, they don't have depth there. So I can't imagine that they'd be willing to trade Cody Bellinger, who's their number one prospect right now, for a two-year rental, basically, at second base, as much as they would like to have Brian Dozier. And I think if they're offering De Leon, they're showing that they would like to have Dozier, but, you know, there's a difference between De Leon in their mind and Cody Bellinger.
Absolutely. And I was looking at some of the headlines on some of the things that you've written and sort of previewing, you know, some things that we need to look out for as we approach spring training, and just some 5 points about the Dodgers. And really, Yasiel Puig, it's interesting because they kind of need him as far as a hitter that can really hit left-handed pitching well. He's really one of the few in that lineup. It wouldn't surprise me if there was a platoon situation with him and they ended up hanging on to him and really needed him to be, you know, cog in that offense.
Well, it depends on which Puig you're talking about. You know,
right.
If you're talking about the rookie Puig from 3 or 4 years ago, yeah. But if you're talking about the one for the last 2 years, then he really has become a platoon player. So, you know, it's one of these unusual situations where a guy shows up and he's a sensation, and then each year he kind of regresses. You like to see progress, not regression. And, you know, unfortunately, he has gone backwards, you know, even to the point where last year he got demoted to AAA. And he finished the year in the big leagues, in the playoffs, but as a platoon player. And, you know, that's one other area where the Dodgers do have depth, you know, in addition to pitching. They have a lot of pitchers, and they have excess pitching. They also have one or two extra outfielders. So, you know, right now, for him to be an everyday player, he's going to have to earn it. He hasn't done that in the last couple of years.
I found another talking point that you had in there pretty interesting, just can the Dodgers stay healthy? And I find it interesting. I mean, they have, like we talked about and like we've seen, obviously they have a ton of depth. It really got them through the season last year, clearly, to win the division. So, but you wonder how long that can go and how deep they can continue to be. And how much injuries, I mean, they weathered a Clayton Kershaw injury, so maybe they can do anything. But it really is, you have to start thinking, like, they cannot continue that trend to be this injured. They have to be healthier if they want to really sustain.
Well, yeah, and that pretty much goes for any team, really. And, you know, they just outmanned everybody last year. You know, they just kept having, because of their depth, they had enough replacements to get through the year, even though they did it kind of unconventionally with a starting rotation that really barely would get them six innings, five sometimes. But they had a deep bullpen, and so they made their way through it, you know, and you could say, well, maybe that's why they can't go any farther. But, you know, they had some freak injuries, and they also had some players that have a history of injuries getting re-injured. So I think this is all part of their desire to get younger, and hopefully when you get younger, you get healthier. It doesn't always work out that way 100%, but I think that's the overall plan.
Right, yeah, and injuries of that number for another team would most of the time derail, like, just your average major league team, but of course the Dodgers aren't your average major league team. So let's end this with a bold prediction going into spring training. It can be something that makes sense, something that's outlandish, something that might be outdated by day one of spring training, but let's make a bold prediction heading into pitchers and catchers reporting.
Well, it might be bold. I don't know if it's a prediction because I'm not going to say that it will happen, but I think it would be pretty intriguing if you think about the possibility, and we were talking earlier about trading Puig, especially if it only looks like he's going to be a platoon player in this outfield. The Dodgers have the depth. with Peterson being pretty much the everyday center fielder, they've got four other outfielders who could platoon two lefties, two righties in right and left field, with Ethier coming off his broken leg, Trace Thompson coming off his back injury, Scott Van Slyke after wrist surgery, and Andrew Toles, who was a rookie, and he played really well in his first couple months in the big league. So, you know, if they were going to do something bold, you know, it looks to me like their team is pretty well set, you know, outside of the hole at second base and maybe a middle reliever. But if they really wanted to shake things up, or they really wanted to dangle a talented, you know, but curious player in Puig, that would be bold. And you know, I think at some point we've talked about trading Puig for several years now, and who knows, maybe this will be the time it happens.
Yeah, that would be bold and interesting. Okay, Ken, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Talk to you next time.
Okay, Allison.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.